UK Wine Show, show number 186 for the 11th of December 2009. Montalcino with Donatella Cinelli Colombini. Good day to you all. My name's Chris Scott and welcome to the UK Wine Show. This week we're talking about Montalcino with Donatella Cinelli Colombini. And this is the last podcast I recorded from my trip to Italy earlier in the year. And in this week's show, we find out all about Montalcino and Vinsanto. We're going to be talking to Donatella about making wines in Montalcino. In the spotlight, I have my Christmas picks for wine books based on the 22 wine books we've reviewed so far since we started that wee set. And I hope your Christmas prep is going well. I plan on starting my presents next week, or this week coming. I know you're thinking, a bit late. Maybe some of you guys are thinking, oh, how organized is that? It's just that this week's been particularly busy. I've had about 4 medium-sized events to run, Christmas parties, etc. And they've been quite hard work. So it's been a case of pack up from one taste and get ready for the next all day long. So lots and lots to do. I've earmarked a rather daunting start to learning Ruby on Rails as well, starting next week. It's JavaScript and all sorts of cutting-edge programming. Quite difficult to learn, I think, but it's going to be dominating a lot of my Christmas and New Year. You may ask why, and to be quite honest, I'm not quite sure whether it's a good idea or not, but I'm hoping to have a program released by February with some rather nice enhancements to my site. It's all going to come together, hopefully, very shortly. So, while you're scoffing mince pies this Christmas, feel sorry for me tapping away and pulling my hair out. Well, wait a second, I haven't got that much hair. Pulling my eyebrow hairs out on code. Okay, let's get into the show this week. First up, though, we have our mystery region. As usual, I'm going to give you two sets of clues, one now and one just before the interview, with the answer at the end of the show. So, this important quality-focused region of Australia has historically been made up of small independent wineries producing premium quality wines that command high prices. The grapes thrive in the gravelly, gritty, sandy soils, which tend to lose their moisture very quickly on the slopes and result in wines of great concentration. The region is noted for Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, and blends of Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc, but Merlot and Shiraz are also gaining reputations. Okay, I'm going to give you a clue on our mystery region in Australia just before the interview with Donatella, but next up we have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. The fine wine market is showing strong signs of recovery, with trading up 27% versus November 2008 and up 6% versus the previous month. Prices remained relatively stable with the LiveX 100 Fine Wine Index at 235. November saw Bordeaux accounting for 88% of trade, down on 2008, followed by Burgundy at 6%. LiveX report the rapid emergence of China as a major trend for 2009, fueling growth in Lafite and other Bordeaux growths. And with the 2009 Bordeaux vintage heralded as an outstanding year, the future for fine wine in 2010 looks rosy.
Well, while the fine wine market is up this year, it's still well down from its peak in June-July 2008, where the index was over 260. It works out around down about 10%. This is a good sign, but we need to ask ourselves, how much of the price is associated with the halo effect from the 2005 vintage, which meant that prices entered a new paradigm? Ultimately, though, Bordeaux prices are not set by the quality of the wines, but by supply and demand, and as such reflect the world economy very well. With the UK still in recession and the US not much better, the key markets on premier wines appear to be in trouble. The Chinese, who have been key purchasers of Bordeaux, will increase the total demand for top Bordeaux, but as they don't normally have a big part in the on-premier market, it would appear that on-premier pricing will be under downward pressure, but the value on holding on to wines will see it rise much faster as the wines mature. Right, from top French wines to innovative English producers, what's Wickham Vineyards up to, Jane?
Well, the Hampshire-based Wickham Vineyard has stepped in at the last minute to save 14 off-licences from closure following the collapse of the First Quench Group. They've purchased 13 stores in Hampshire and one in Dorset, saving 64 jobs and bringing their own workforce to 94. The move is the Vineyard's first expansion into retail beyond their Vineyard shop and will, of course, provide distribution for their own wines. Vineyard manager Wilhelm Mead said key decisions such as whether to rebrand and what to call the shops had yet to be made and will be looked at after Christmas.
Well, I did say last week I wasn't expecting to cover any more first quench stories, but this is such a strange move for a winery I thought we had better cover it. I can't think of anywhere in the world where a vineyard owns such a range of wine stores. It will be interesting to see how they deal with it, and I can't think why they'd want to do it, apart from finding a sales channel for their wines. But it seems crazy to buy retails to solve that problem. So it would seem that it's a move to diversify their income streams. And 14 stores based around their vineyard, with a central office and shipping centres, it's an easy way of gaining critical mass in a market relatively quickly, relatively cheaply, and relatively local. I just don't know if it's a good move. What's the last story, Jane?
Well, until now, New Zealand dessert wines have been banned from Europe, but after 15 years of lobbying, they can be legally imported. The new legislation sees a relaxation of the rules on EU countries importing wine with a natural potential alcohol level of more than 15%, and this applies to most sweet New Zealand wines. David Cox of New Zealand Wine Growers said he believed the wines would be a success, being of exceptional quality, and that the trade had been waiting impatiently to be able to sell them. That's it from me this week, but don't forget to visit our website to check out these stories in full. www.3050.co.uk.
Cheers, Jane. New Zealand sweet wines were one of the last wines banned in the UK. Quite a few years ago, the Australians managed to negotiate access for their sweet wines, and New Zealand sweet wines are very good. I think they're too much competition for European producers myself. Some New Zealand producers are still a bit annoyed that the alcohol levels have to be over 8.5%, whilst German and Italian producers don't have to worry about that. That effectively gives them a monopoly on those lower alcoholic wines. But I'm less worried about these special cases, as they're there to preserve historical styles and are very much the exception to the rules. If it's to be called wine, it must be over 8.5%. So congratulations to the EU for doing the right thing eventually. Okay, that's pretty much the news. Next, though, we've got our spotlight. And this week, we're looking at books for Christmas. So, top wine books. Well, I've been reviewing books for about a year and a half now, and I thought it was time to review all our top books and those that make good presents for people. So I've divided the books up into four groups. Wine books that are for business, books for education, reference, and just pure pleasure. The reference books, and these are subjective obviously, but I think the top reference book is The Oxford Companion to Wine, written by Jancis Robinson. The Oxford Companion to Wine is one of the great wine reference books and is a must for any serious wine student or hardened enthusiast. While this book is a must, you will need to have other reference books. And if you're only going to have two books, it would have to be The Oxford Companion to Wine and The World Atlas of Wine by Hugh Johnson and Jancis Robinson. This gives excellent overview of wine, regions, and brilliant maps. If you can go to three reference books, then I would suggest The Oxford Companion to Wine, The Concise World Atlas of Wine. Again, this is a shortened version of the World Atlas of Wine. And the key loss are producers. But this is more than adequately recovered by the third book, The Hugh Johnson Wine Companion, which perfectly dovetails the Concise World Atlas of Wine. For a more geeky book, why don't you try Jamie Good's Wine Science? It's a great book and certainly worth a read. Now, the books for business. The top wine book for business, I thought, was Crush It by Gary Vaynerchuk. It's not so much a wine book, but a business book about social media. Other books to consider are also Malcolm Gluck's Great Wine Swindle. This is a tell-all look under the sheets of the wine industry, but reads more like an attack than an expose. The top educational book, I thought, was Choosing the Right Wine, a Teach Yourself book by Beverly Blanning. Choosing the Right Wine, I thought, was an excellent book for those looking to learn more about wine. A must-read for those who want to know lots about wine, but not necessarily about grapes and regions. If you want to learn to taste wine, probably the best educational book to consider is Michael Schuster's Essential Wine Tasting. Michael Schuster describes this book as a how-to and why rather than a what type of book, and it's certainly without doubt the best written book on how to taste wine I've read. And the final category is books for pleasure. And to be honest, I haven't reviewed too many of those. I've got some interesting ones, but I'm not going to get to them before Christmas. So the one to really recommend was Chateau Monty by Malty Waldron. Chenin Monti is a true story of wine writer Monty Walden moving to the south of France and making wine. The narrative is a bit weak in places, but to a wine buff, it's a fun read, enjoyable and educational. A great combination. That pretty much ends the spotlight. Just a wee note that you can get a 40% off discount for the Concise Wine Atlas, the Hugh Johnson Wine Companion, and Michael Schuster's Wine Tasting by going to our website, and there's a link to the publisher who's doing 40% off these books till Christmas. If you are interested in getting that, do have a look. They can also ship internationally as well, so you might want to consider that. Also, if you did enter a competition to get one of these books, remember we were giving away a couple of those books earlier in the year, you should have your book by now. If you haven't got it, and I've had lots of positive emails back from people saying, yes, they've received it, thank you very much. But if you haven't received it, do drop me an email at chris.scott@3050.co.uk or contact me through Twitter at winescriber. Okay, that ends the spotlight. Next up, though, we've got the mystery wine region. It's our second clue, so here's our second clue. Our mystery region is both a town and a wine region in the southwestern corner of Western Australia. The region is situated within a narrow 100-kilometre strip between two capes, Cape Naturalist in the north and Cape Llewellyn in the south. Cape Naturalist sounds like a nudist colony, doesn't it? As the region is uniquely bounded by ocean on three sides, its characteristic is a maritime climate. In January, the mean average temperature is 19 degrees, and there's usually a long dry period between October and April, perfect for growing cool climate grapes. In the spring, salty winds whip up the seed, causing problems in the vines when flowering, and this often results in low grape production and an associated increase in quality. Do have a wee think about that. I'm going to give you the answers after our interview, which is coming up next. If you recall, last week we visited Montepulciano. Well, I went to Montalcino the day before that and visited Donatella Cinelli Colombini. And her wines are really nice. I particularly enjoy some of her wines. She recently won an award for one of Italian's top 100 wines for Promdonna Brunello 2004 by Paolo Massabrio and Marco Gatti. Let's listen to what she has to say about herself and the different styles of Montalcino wines. Hi. I'm here in Decorcia, which is just between Montalcino and Montepulciano. I'm here with Donatella Cinelli Colombini and Alessia Bianchi from Donatella Cinelli Colombini Wineries. How are you, ladies?
Fine, thanks.
Thank you.
We're going to be talking a wee bit about your winery and your family and what you guys do. You make wines here and also in Montalcino?
Yes, we have two wineries, one in Montalcino in the Brunello area, and the second here in the DOC Orcia area, in Fattoria del Colle here, and Casato Prime Donne in Montalcino.
And I presume that the reason you do that is because you grow grapes in Montalcino, and you need to make it within Montalcino boundary?
I born in a family who produce wine from many time and in Montalcino. And in 1998, I left my family estate, my family winery, to create a new project. And I'm organized two little wineries, one in Montalcino, the Casato Prime Donne, and one here in DOC Orcia, the Fattoria del Colle. Because this is my father's estate, and in Montalcino it was my mother that gave me a little property with a building that was destroyed, and in which now there is my new winery.
Excellent.
And of course, it was a big work, and at the beginning there was quite nothing. And at the beginning my wine, the little quantity of wine that my mother gave me just to begin the commercialization, it was in my family estate, my family winery. And so I needed a cellar master to care this wine. And I asked for a cellar master at the Siena School for Enology. and it was impossible to have a good cellar master. But when I asked for a female cellar master, the answer of the school changed. And I understood that for the lady, for the women, was very, very difficult to have good opportunity of job in wine.
Oh.
For this reason, I decide to do a project, the Prima Donna project, and to have a winery in which work only women. For this reason, the original name of my Montalcino estate, Casato, was changed in Casato Prime Donne, the name of this project. And I made also a Brunello, a wine, selected by four women, just to say the choose, the taste of the women is important.
Because normally Brunello di Montalcino is quite a big, robust wine with lots of tannins.
No. Because in 1998, when I began, also the main Italian wine guide, the Gambero Rosso guide, had only men as wine tester. Mm-hmm. There was no women. And the importance of the women in the wine world was little, quite nothing.
In Italy?
In Italy.
Yeah. And has things changed now?
Yes. Now, in the sommelier course in Rome, one half of the students are women.
Excellent.
And so now we have two wineries, and the both together produce about 180,000 bottles. We sell this bottle in 24 countries mm-hmm. around the world. We obtain a lot of award. I believe that we are able to increase not only our winery, but also the region. For example, in this area, the DOC Orcia area, when I arrived 11 years ago, there was nothing. We was the first wineries in this area. Now there are four.
How do you think your wines are different because women are making the wines?
We are courageous. We try to do something of new. For example, in Montalcino, now we are trying the new local selected yeast.
Yeasts.
Till now, there was only two kind of yeasts. The natural ones.
Wild fermentation, so whatever
yes.
was out there, yep.
And the selected is by the main wine region in Europe, maybe Bordeaux, Bourgogne, or so on.
Okay. Yep.
Now we are trying to produce Brunello with the Brunello yeasts,
mm-hmm.
selected by a laboratory with an European head.
We were talking earlier, you said that you've produced a couple of trial vintages now with these yeasts.
Yeah.
How are they going? Do they taste the same or different?
No, it's different. It's more elegant but less strong.
In terms of alcohol, lower
alcohol? In terms of polyphenol content.
Okay, so it's not as aromatic?
No, it's not. The body is less.
Oh, okay, so it's more in the body.
Yeah.
Okay. Just talking about a classic Brunello di Montalcino,
mm-hmm.
How would you define the typical Brunello di Montalcino?
And the typical Brunello di Montalcino must be good. Must be good and able to age. We are working to produce better and better. For example, now we are working about French instrument that is able to understand the aromatic maturation of the ripeness of the grape.
So you get the grape and you can test it for aromatic compounds.
Yes.
How do you do that?
It is a scanner that check the grape.
Oh, okay.
And this help us to do better. And this is the challenge, to do always better, to try to obtain the maximum in the in each vintage. For example, now the temperature is warmer than 10 years ago. And of course, we have to balance the alcohol content of the grape. And for this reason, the system of the green cutting of the leaf is changing. Because we have to force the vine to produce more wood and less alcohol. And of course, we need also a shadow. And the quantity of grape of each vine must be reduced.
Reduced?
Yes.
Even though it's warmer?
Because, not this year, but usually, the less water is in the soil, the less grape you can obtain.
Oh, okay, yeah, all right. So if you're trying to have a big crop, there's
because the hydric stress is stronger, and we have to help the vine.
Okay. Montalcino is one of the driest regions in Italy, isn't it? Or at least in Tuscany.
It's dry. Not this year, but usually it's dry.
This year it's a bit wet?
Yes, we had the rainiest winter in 200 years.
Really?
Yes.
Excellent. Oh, that's quite good, though. It's good to have some rain, I think. I was up in Barolo a couple of days ago. They had a very, very snow, lots of snow up there. Do you get snow down here?
Sometime.
People describe Montalcino as Tuscany's answer to Barolo. Do you think so?
No.
No? How do you make your Montalcino?
Of course, the most important work is in the vineyard. To choose the place to cultivate the grape, the vineyard. But it is also very, very important, the moment of the grape harvest. Because for the Sangiovese, the rain during the grape harvest is a real disaster.
Yeah.
And so we have to pray for the sun. This is the first.
In Montalcino, you normally harvest a wee bit earlier than Chianti?
Yes.
Is that right? So you
sometimes about
miss the rain.
10, 15 days before then in Chianti.
And sometimes you miss the rain and they get it?
Of course, it is a stress to look at the forecast. Yes, each day, because if the rain is arriving, it is a disaster, a real disaster. This is the first problem. Of course, it is necessary to have the best quality of tanks, of barrel, of everything, because in the wine is something like the Olympic game. To have to obtain the maximum in each thing. Also, the smaller things in a winery are important. Everything. The floating table to check the grape, the pump, the tanks, everything must be the maximum. And of course, the people who work in the winery must be very, very clever.
You've got lots of stainless steel tanks. We saw some normal stainless steel tanks, but you're describing tanks you use in Montalcino as almost conical shape,
yeah.
So they go up to a point, and open-topped as well. What's the reason for that?
We have two wineries, two vinification rooms in Montalcino. One is traditional, and the new one has a funny name, Wind Winery. It means that it's open. on, there are no wall around, because we are trying to obtain the maximum oxygenation naturale.
The natural oxygenation, using the air as first element.
Okay, so you're trying to oxidize the wine a wee bit during fermentation.
To give, to help the yeasts. And, of course, the new tanks are conic and open.
So do they go up in an angle out, or do they go up in an angle to a point?
Yeah.
Why conical, though?
Because you know that during the fermentation, the grape skin is going up.
Yep.
And so we have, we need to, what is it, submerge.
Punch the cap.
Yeah.
Yes. And so it, we need easier.
It makes it easier to push the cap. Is that because you've got women doing it, or is it?
No. There is an engine.
Oh, yeah.
We are not strong enough.
But if you push it down, won't it just sort of pop back up into the same place?
No, there is something like a line with an engine that push down the grape.
Okay. So who
without
makes...
pump.
Yep.
Without pump.
So you're not pumping over. You're,
No.
To avoid the pumping over of the cap, we will build this line on the roof. There will be a machine with...
Yeah, a pneumatic press to push down.
Yeah.
I've seen them before.
Yeah.
You've got you're trying to get lots of oxygen into the wine.
Yes, this is the idea. Is to come back at the system that was used about 200 years ago with the vinification tanks open in a big area with a lot of clean air. This is the situation that we have in Montalcino. There is no industry, no pollution, and so we can use the oxygenation, the natural oxygenation, to help the vinification.
If you've got no walls and just a roof, as you describe, and air flowing through, do you chill the tanks?
Yes.
They are temperature.
There is the heating under the tanks and the cooler around.
You heat the tanks?
If it is necessary, we can help the vinification heating the grape. Usually it's not necessary.
Does it get quite cold during fermentation, temperature-wise?
Usually it is not necessary, but with new tanks, it is necessary to have everything the best.
Okay. Quite often, a lot of winemakers chill the wine down during fermentation, particularly if you're making white wines.
Yes, of course, but we have only a little quantity of white wine.
Okay. And what's the more traditional method of making Brunello di Montalcino?
This is the traditional system.
It is, with the conical tanks.
Many, many years ago, the conical tanks was in wood. Of course, it was a real problem to clean that. Yeah. Because you know that during the period in which the tanks is empty...
Bacteria, mold.
Yes. Bacteria problem.
Yeah.
So stainless steel solve this problem.
Yep.
This is the reason for which we use the steel tanks. But the system that we use was the original one. The grape is picked by hand, arrive very, very quickly in the winery, and arrive in the tanks without pump.
Yep.
And, of course, many, many years ago, there was very strong farmer that pushed down the grape in the fermentation tanks. Now we have the engine, but at the end, the situation is the same.
And aging the wine, do you use the big barrels?
At the beginning, I preferred the small one.
New or old oak?
New.
New oak and small
barrels. The best quality of our wine need of new oak at the beginning.
And then?
And because at the beginning, wine that need to age need also to close the molecule.
Then the molecules, the anthocyanins.
Yeah, must be close. Without connection open. Because if one connection of this molecule is open, this molecule is able to connect it with another one after doing the aging in bottle, and the color fall down.
Oh, okay. So you're trying to fix the color by oxidizing the wine. Okay, yeah. No, I follow that. So
this is all possible only in little barrel.
Oh, okay.
This is the reason for which we use the little barrel at the beginning and the big one after.
Oh, okay. All right. So you're trying to fix the color by using a little barrel. Okay. And then the aging in the big barrels, what does that do?
For the Brunello rules, we have 2 years. This is the minimum period in barrel. Mm-hmm. 2 years in barrel. After, for 1 year, you can choose. And at the end of the third year, you can put the wine in bottle. The third year, you need to keep quiet the wine without stress or in cement container or in big barrel, just to sleep.
Yeah.
At the end of the third year, you can put the wine in bottle. At the end of the fourth year, you can sell this wine. The 4 year of aging and 5 year with the grape harvest year.
Yeah, okay. All right, so that's Brunello. We also had a look around and you're making a dessert wine in quite small barrels with concrete on the top. I was like...
This is a typical Tuscan dessert wine, the Vinsanto.
Vinsanto.
It is a very, very old tradition. Many, many years ago in the Chianti area, the rich family brought Marsala and sherry and cognac in barrel. When this barrel was empty, they put it. This barrel on the roof, under the roof. In Italy we say in soffitta. In soffitta
in
is,
loft.
Yep.
Is the place in which you put the thing that you don't use.
Yep.
Mettere in soffitta, it means put something in a place very, very far.
Away,
And so they learn how using this barrel with a white sweet wine that is sweet or dry, it depends by the barrel that you use. If you use the Marsala barrel, is sweeter. If you use the cognac barrel is drier, but it is a tradition of Tuscany.
Okay, and the wine we tried was very oxidized. It was very brown in color.
Yes,
And it wasn't too sweet. I thought when I tried it.
Yes, this is my family tradition.
Okay, then I think we'll wrap it up there, Donatella. I know you're very busy today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed that interview. Donatella is a pretty interesting lady. Not too sure about whether it's legal to just employ women in key roles within a wine company or whether that's considered sex discrimination, but she's got away with it. Okay, I had some feedback from Colin. I won't give you his last name, but he knows who he is. He gave me a nice email in which I quite enjoyed, and he said he's been enjoying the podcast, particularly the ones with Jamie. He's especially enjoying the quizzes, which is quite nice to know because I never quite know whether you're enjoying them or not and whether you get them or not. He suggested we try some producers or winemakers for something completely different. Maybe not someone too obscure, maybe someone like Mondavi or Darenberg. Well, Colin, thanks for the email. And yes, I thought about including personalities and producers. I actually did Gary Vaynerchuk a wee while ago, and I meant to continue doing that, but I forgot to do it.
I've updated my show schedule, so now I know what's coming up in the next week. And I have slotted in some producers and some personalities in there as well. So next week, you'll get the first one of those. Right, let's get close to the end of the show with our mystery region. How did you get on with that? It was, of course, Margaret River. Here's the clues again. Margaret River is both a town and a wine region in the southwest corner of Western Australia. The region is situated in a narrow 100-kilometre strip between the two capes, Cape Naturalist, the nudist colony, no, and to the north, and Cape Llewellyn to the south. As the region is uniquely bounded by ocean on all three sides, its characteristic is maritime climate. In January, the mean temperature is 19 degrees, and there's usually a hot, dry period between October and April, perfect for growing cool climate grapes. Spring salty winds do cause a loss in volume during flowering, and this often associates with higher quality. Historically, small independent wineries have produced premium quality wines that command high prices. This is under pressure these days with New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc having massive inroads into Australia over the last couple of years. The grapes thrive on gravelly, gritty and sandy soils, which tend to lose their moisture very quickly on slopes, resulting in wines with great concentration. The region is noted for its Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay and blends of Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc, but Merlot and Shiraz are also gaining popularity. Okay, that pretty much finishes up the show. We've just got the quote this week. It's from Nikos Kazantzakis, arguably the most important and most translated Greek writer and philosopher of the 20th century. Yet he wasn't well known until 1964 with the release of the movie Zorba the Greek. This week's quote is from Zorba the Greek and is a suitable quote, I think, for a recession hit Christmas. How simple and frugal a thing is happiness. A glass of wine, a roast chestnut, a wretched little brazier, and the sound of the sea. All that is required to feel that there is now happiness is a simple, frugal heart. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.